So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Keller Williams, Jacksonville Realty.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes, is presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products on 1010XL. Now your hosts,
Lauren Brooks,
Donna Murphy, and Blythe Brumley.
Welcome into Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. Donna has the night off. Hopefully she gets to feeling a little bit better. Blythe, how was the show last week without me?
It was awesome. I mean, not because you weren't here, but it was great. Hacker filled in. Tyler helped out a bunch. Had really good chemistry with Hacker, and it went really well. We didn't talk about Disney once, which was a little surprising because we talk about that every single week whenever he comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I certainly appreciate you guys filling in. I needed the night off, and it's been a tough week, but certainly I do appreciate, for people who know what's going on, I do appreciate everyone who's reached out and given their condolences after I lost a really close friend last week. Let's get it to the players. I got to be there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then I took off for the funeral on Friday. Mm-hmm. So what was the best part of the players for you, Blythe?
I would say probably the food. That's one of the bigger draws for me for live sporting events is always going and trying out the different food options. We were lucky enough the week before to participate in the TPC food tour, and I was introduced to a new place called Southern Soul Barbecue at that very location. And so I sought them out. I was with a group of people, and I said, no, we have to go try this barbecue place because
they were at Palm Valley Village, right?
Yes. Yeah, so they were located there, but their actual restaurant is in St. Simon's Island. They've been voted 2 years in a row as the best barbecue in the South by Southern Living Magazine. So I think that's kind of huge. And so knowing that, I sold it to my friends. Look, we have to go try this place. And it was great because I was with a couple people who don't eat pork. And so they had some beef options, especially their beef ribs. And they just had a quick like grab and go selection and, you know, piled the coleslaw high on the sandwiches and extra pickles and barbecue sauce and all that good stuff.
So which days did you get to get out there?
I went on Friday, and I only really went for about a half of the day. I wanted to go a little bit longer, but it was a little bit of a fiasco as far as trying to find parking. And that it, this was
did
the
you
first,
have parking in advance?
No, I okay. didn't. But this was the first year that I went to the players as a fan. The first time in, gosh, like it's probably 6 or 7 years that I've gone to the players as a fan. And every other year I've had, media parking and media shuttles. And so it was super, super easy just to get to and from the players. I won't say super easy, but a lot easier than it was on Friday because it was a nightmare as far as travel. I had to park at the Target at JTB in, I guess it's A1A, or at the JTB where that Target is. So I had to park there and then catch an Uber from there to get into the players. But my Uber driver didn't know that he was supposed to go to a certain shuttle location. So you had to take an Uber to the shuttle location where all the Ubers were at, and then they shuttled you into the course.
Okay.
And so since my driver didn't know that, we just sat in traffic for forever, for close to an hour. And so since he didn't know that, we went the back route to like Solana Road, which is not the main entrance of TPC Sawgrass, but it's the back entrance. And so we took that route. And when they told him to turn around, we just got out of the car and just decided to walk inside. Come to find out, it's like a mile walk.
Yeah, from
to get
that
in.
Entrance to a little farther.
Yeah, it was kind of a nightmare.
Well, so going forward, a lot of times parking does sell out for Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
So make sure that you either do the 4 more park for free and print your voucher way ahead of time, or buy the parking way ahead of time, and then you'll avoid not necessarily the traffic, but you'll avoid the issue as far as having a parking spot.
Well, I don't know how the players can fix this. I know that this is something that they've tried to address for years and years, and I don't have a clear answer for it, but it was just it is one of those things that was just so frustrating that once you finally got to the players, it was like, okay, we're here. We go through security, and I have a purse, and my girlfriend has a purse, and they're both the same size, and they tell her that her purse is not allowed in because it's not a clear bag, and it's bigger than, the allotted size. And she's not going back. After what we just sat through and what we just walked through, she's not going anywhere. So she had to throw away her purse and had to carry around her stuff all day, and it was just one of those, I hate this purse rule that sports leagues have instilled at NFL level.
I thought you liked
the
clear bags.
No, I want to wear my own purse if I can. I only buy clear bags because I have to for NFL games. But we thought that our purses were small enough. We looked on social media, tried to see what other women were wearing, and we saw their photos, and we're like, okay, well, if they can get in, then we can get in. And I got in just fine. It was her that had to be, you know, put her purse by the trash can.
Did so she get it when she left?
No,
wasn't gone.
Yeah, it was definitely gone.
Yeah, I got a clear bag, I guess, from the players last year. See, I love the clear bag because I don't really enjoy having a purse. I don't know why. It feels like it's, for some reason, more annoying to have it. And so I love the clear bag option. Now, for football games, it's great because you get to bring food in if you're going as a fan. But I don't mind the clear bag option because I actually feel like I can carry more stuff with the clear bag than I can a small purse. So if I bring like a change of shoes or, you know, deodorant if it's really hot, obviously that'll be a little different next year. I feel like I can get a lot more in.
I detest this rule with every fiber in my being. And if I can think to like, you know, amusement parks and even like Disney World or even Universal, they don't have this clear purse rule. And they have thousands and thousands of people that come into their attractions every single day. And the NFL and other sports leagues can't get it right. It's just a sexist rule, and I've hated it since they have instilled it, and I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but I could really talk all day about how stupid this rule is.
Well, it's not necessarily sexist. Yes, most guys don't carry purses,
right.
But if a guy showed up with a bag that was too big, they wouldn't say, oh, well, you can come in and she can't bring her purse in.
Well, they're still looking through your bag. You're still going through a metal detector. And like I said, if amusement parks can allow you in, can allow people with backpacks in and all kinds of stuff into theme parks every single day, I don't see why sports leagues can't do the same thing. It's just a dumb, dumb rule.
All right, so did you follow Tiger at all? You're a Tiger supporter.
I got there too late. Got there too late, ended up getting over to the benefactor area and met up with T-Wig and Baloo, ended up going on air with them for a little bit, so that was cool. Stayed in the benefactor area to actually get cool after that long walk, but we walked the course a little bit, saw a couple golfers, but no one too, you know, too noteworthy, I guess you could say. I guess they're all noteworthy if they're on the PGA Tour, but... outside of that, just enjoyed it from like a fan perspective rather than a person of the media, which was fun.
Tiger teed off Thursday afternoon, Friday morning.
Yep.
Tyler, you went out there. What was the crowd like surrounding Tiger?
Obviously, it's massive anytime Tiger Woods does anything anywhere in the world, but it was pretty massive. And I went there on Sunday to follow Jordan and Tiger. And starting at number one, the crowd was obviously pretty huge, but hole by hole, progressively just got bigger and bigger. I saw the front nine, and by the time the hole number 10 came around, it was unbearable. So I decided to go home and try and catch the last few holes of 16, 17, and 18, which is pretty cool. So yeah, I caught the front nine, but not the back nine.
And I don't know how many people can get away necessarily on Thursday versus Friday, but if you can get out on Thursday and swap your days, I highly recommend it. I was telling my parents over the weekend, Thursday has become one of my absolute favorite days to be out there because there are lighter crowds, and that new, where we were broadcasting, that new Publix bleachers between 12 and 13, you literally can watch both holes and all the action without having to move, and it's covered. Oh, and by the way, if you're a fan, there's waitresses right there, so you don't even have to leave to get like a Mick Ultra or a beverage of choice. So I think there are ways that you just have to know kind of the different places to go opposite the crowds. I know one place my dad loves to sit is the 11 green, and it's actually where Webb Simpson had eagled. He didn't see it, but it was he eagled on Saturday there, and so they were there on Friday. But you just got to, I think, the more you go, the more you learn ways to avoid the major crowds and also different places or different days to go when you're going opposite. So I told them, like, you know, if you can only go either Thursday or Friday, I think start going on Thursday. Although now that we say that, you know, more and more people might jump on that. But certainly having Tiger out there and that awesome pairing that he was in,
yes,
it drew a ton of people. And so it was really fun for us. I know, at least for me, because I didn't get to go out there the rest of the weekend. But Thursday was fantastic. The Webb Simpson really lack of drama all weekend. When it came to the final finished, were you cheering for Webb Simpson?
No, I was cheering for Tiger because he started making a run on Sunday. But unfortunately, Webb Simpson he had too much of a lead going into Sunday that I think it was damn near impossible for anybody else to.
But you weren't rooting against Webb to, like, you weren't hoping that he fell apart. You were just hoping Tiger got in.
Yeah, and when I heard, because I took a Mother's Day trip out of town. So on Friday, after we got done with the golf tournament, a couple family members, we all got together and drove to Daytona for just a little weekend getaway for Mother's Day. And so when I got back in town on Sunday, that's when I started hearing the rumblings that Tiger was making moves. I turned on the TV and it was the first bogey that he had all day. And I said, okay, I'm just going to turn it off, because I don't want to give him bad luck. And I just kept following on my phone, and I saw that it was, you know, I guess too little too late, but he was making a run, and that gives me hope, because he continues to play better and better.
When he went in the water on 18, Tyler, did you at any point think that he might not win the tournament?
Who, Webb?
Yeah.
No. It was long over. He could have gone in the water like two or three more times and probably still won. Yeah.
I just, for a second, I was like, uh-oh. I just wonder. I know he's got this big lead, but I just wonder if the pressure's kind of mounting at this point. We saw Adam Scott do that in 2004. He had a two-stroke lead over Padraig Harrington, and he went in the water on 18, so he gave a shot back, and he had to make a putt to win, and he did. But I just wondered for a half a second, is Webb... Yes, he's been in the spotlight before, you know, winning a US Open. But is it possible that he gives it all back?
Right. Nothing's safe till 17 when he finally landed the tee shot on the green for Webb at 17. Then I was like, okay, he has this in the bag. He can pretty much just, you know, mail it in and still win.
Absolutely. Now, Hayes is concerned that the sundresses are going to go away when the tournament moves back to March. I told him, girls will freeze. It doesn't matter. They are still going to wear the sundresses. Anything else that you'd like to see in March?
That was actually a big topic of discussion when I was on with Rick and T-Wig. We talked the entire segment about sundresses and if that will change at all. I don't think it'll change. I think it will see, if we see anything more, it'll be more maxi dresses, just because you can actually wear a maxi dress in March without feeling like death like you currently do if you go
in May. So a maxi dress, for guys who don't know, is usually a dress that goes either all the way to the ground or is past the knees, so a little bit longer. So less legs, that might be, you know, a reason to be upset if you're a guy.
I reckon on that part. But yeah, you can, it still gets ungodly hot here in March. You have that give or take, but I think it that'll just be one of the additional perks, that you'll have good hair days, hopefully, and you'll be
unless it's raining.
Oh, that's true too.
But see, what I am actually glad that it's not going to be quite as hot, you know, this year really wasn't bad, but there have been years before where I don't care how much you prepped for the heat, you still just were completely worn out by the time you were out there for a few hours. And I know it got pretty hot on Friday and a little bit on Saturday, but not like it has been in years past. But still, I think a little bit of relief from the heat. Just hopefully we'll have those beautiful spring March days where the azaleas are about to bloom, and maybe they can kind of massage those like Augusta does.
When they put freezer bags on the roots in order to trick the plants into thinking.
Yeah, and so hopefully it'll be, you know, beautiful blue sky days, not nearly as hot, and it'll be fantastic. Either way, I think it's one of the best golf events of the year.
Oh, of course.
And especially the fact that it's in our backyard.
And the pairings, too. That was one thing that I really took away from this. You know, on the first day, we had Tiger and Phil together, and along with Ricky. And then on Sunday, you had Tiger and Jordan together. So the golf needs to take that approach at future tournaments as far as putting their high marquee players together.
We'll get into sports gambling a little later in the show, but coming up next, we're going to talk about hidden talents and frozen food. That's all next. You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes on 1010XL.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome back into Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. My name is Blythe Brimley, and I'm joined alongside Lauren Brooks. Donna Murphy has the night off, and soon tonight you will hear, I believe it's on 1010, that you'll hear NBA pregame coverage. But we're with you until then, so we're going to talk a little bit of NBA ourselves. And it tipped off over the past few days, the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. Boston blew out the Cavs on Sunday night, while the Warriors established their dominance last night over the Rockets in another blowout victory. Game 2 for Boston and Cleveland tips off tonight, and the Houston and Golden State will tip off tomorrow. So for those of – Tyler, I'm gonna go to you for this. For those people who haven't watched a lick of the NBA, what should they know about these two series?
Most people are declaring the Western Conference series already over, which – I think personally is a little overreaction after just one game. In the Eastern Conference game, which will be here in what, 10 minutes or what is it, 7:30,
8 o'clock? It tips at 8:30. Pre-game starts at 7:30.
Oh, at 8:30 tip, yeah. A little later. Okay. And that one, it's everyone saying LeBron James doesn't have much of a supporting cast. I also tend to disagree with that narrative as well because Kevin Love's a really good player and he just hasn't been shooting very well. And the way LeBron James kind of plays is he has the ball in his hands all the time and just kind of has like guys standing around watching him. Which it's easy to watch LeBron James just do his thing but true. And get distracted. But that's what he does is he kind of just has the ball in his hands the entire time and asks guys to just make shots and not really create their own type of thing. So the flow with playing with LeBron is a little tough. And so Cleveland's offense was really terrible in the first game, and they lost by like 25 points in game one. So some people are declaring both of these series over and kind of just saying it's a Golden State-Boston Finals preview. Which we're only one game into both series, so if you haven't watched either game, I think there's a lot more basketball to be played in both series. I think Houston's going to give Golden State a run. I thought Houston would win a series at the start, but I'm not ready to reverse course on that. But I think both series are going to go at least 5 or 6.
Now the Celtics traded for Kyrie at the end of last season, and yes. He got hurt earlier this season, and so there's a lot of people saying that the Celtics are playing so well without him that they should just get rid of Kyrie altogether.
That's ridiculous. I mean, Kyrie is the reason that LeBron has another championship in Cleveland or won the first one because he hit, I mean, one of the most clutch shots in NBA history. I mean, against the sure. Golden State Warriors on the road, I mean, with, what, less than a minute left, that three on the right wing. So, no, I mean, Kyrie Irving is one of the most unguardable players I've ever seen. Some people are saying that his handles, which is, you know, NBA slang for his ball handling, is off the charts, and some people have said it's the best ever in the history of the league. Like, I mean, you've got guys like John Havlicek and Pete Maravich who are pretty flashy with the ball, you know, in the older era, but they have nothing on Kyrie Irving. So that is a ridiculous take based upon, you know, playing against teams like Milwaukee and the 76ers who are young and inexperienced and not really well coached. So let's see what those people are saying now after the Cavaliers series. It's not over. They have LeBron James, best player in the world.
Why do you think that the Celtics have been so good without Kyrie?
Their coach is probably the best one in the league. And
they know how to play defense.
That is true. They are number one in the league in defensive rating, which is just a kind of a metric that all encompasses a team's defensive performance. And they've been number one, and it's with a bunch of young guys, which is really impressive because they have Jason Tatum, who's a first-round pick from this year. Jaylen Brown, first-round pick from last year. They're playing with guys who are new to the system, like Aaron Baines coming off the bench. So basically,
don't forget about my guy, Al Horford.
Al Horford, yeah, he's a max player, max contract. People are kind of calling him Average Al because he's overrated for his salary, so to say. But he's a guy who's perfect for the team. He's a veteran leader, and he does a lot of things that don't show up in the stat sheet. But the reason why they are overachieving, I think a large part is Brad Stevens. If you don't watch a lot of basketball and you want to notice what a coach does and what a bad coach does, watch the plays after timeouts. When they come back from commercial break, what is the play that the team is going to run after a timeout? And Boston's always running one for an open layup.
Nice perspective.
Unbelievable.
So when it comes to the, in your opinion, is more of the NBA Finals in theory in the Western Conference?
I think that, yes, I think that is your absolute winner, and they're going to smoke whoever comes out of the Eastern Conference. It's not going to be close, and honestly, I think if Houston wins, somehow they're going to sweep whoever comes out of the East, and obviously Golden State, whoever comes out. And I know that we have a history of LeBron versus Golden State, but this is a completely different scenario. I mean, there's a stat that's like Golden State's 25-3 in the playoffs since Kevin Durant's there.
Wow.
One of those games is without Steph Curry. And I think the other game, Draymond Green was kicking some guy in the private areas and was suspended. So a full strength Golden State Warriors squad with Kevin Durant in Oakland, they're almost unbeatable in the playoffs. So if you haven't watched any of the playoffs, I highly recommend it. And I know people say they don't play defense, but last night's game, even though it was a high scoring game, there was still defense to be played.
Yeah, I feel like it's gotten to the point where the last round was exciting enough that you need to tune in. Like if I'm watching it, then that means the casual person should absolutely be watching it. I'm legitimately excited about tonight's game. I think the Cavs are in trouble. So obviously I'm cheering for the Celtics. If Donna was here, she would of course be wearing probably her Garnett jersey by the Celtics or for the Celtics. But I think we are at a real potential crossroads. I mean, LeBron may not play for the Cavaliers next year, but we're also seeing what if this is his greatest run ever in the postseason? What if he can actually carry this team, which, yes, Tyler, Kevin Love's not terrible, but he certainly doesn't have a great team around him. So what if he can actually carry them to the finals? What if they could actually beat either Houston or Golden State. I think we are watching some history unfold.
Of course. He's the greatest player in the game has ever seen. And in his, not his acumen as far as on the court, but even off the court. He's a student of the game, and he's damn near uncoachable because he memorizes every single play. We're going to get into that in just a second. But one side note, Tyler, why does the NBA draft happen on while the season is still going on?
All of the teams who are the NBA draft
involved are not in the playoffs.
Are not in the playoffs. Oh, the draft lottery is here tonight.
It's tonight.
Yeah, it's here in like 10 minutes, I think. So that's on ESPN.
It's the lottery, not the draft.
It's the lottery. Okay. So it's the 14 teams who did not make the playoffs, or no, 16 teams who did not make
the
playoffs.
So this is the ping pong night.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a very important night for me, Dan, and Jeff, because the Atlanta Hawks, Chicago Bulls, and New York Knicks were all very bad this year, and they were tanking. And there were like 8 teams in the league who were just flat out trying to lose games, and whether they want to say it or not, it happened. So those teams will find out if they're rewarded tonight for the number one pick.
Oh, yikes. Okay, well, moving on to a little bit more of NBA talk, we sort of briefly mentioned this, but after game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, LeBron James was asked what happened in the fourth quarter, and he proceeds to start naming off every single play that the Celtics ran after they came back from, or even just to start the fourth quarter. And he named off like 10 plays when the Celtics went on a 7-0 run. And so it sort of led to this question that Lauren alluded to earlier in the show, that outside of, I mean, LeBron James being the greatest gift the basketball world has ever seen, in my opinion, you didn't allude to this, but he's a photogenic memory, and I thought it was amazing to witness that in a press conference format. But it's almost like a hidden talent. So, actually, Tyler has audio for LeBron answering that question from a reporter.
The start of the fourth, I think they cut it to 14. Do you have any idea what, I mean, I think they scored 7 quick ones. Anything, what happened there?
What happened? We ran them the first possession. We ran them down all the way to 2 on the shot clock. Marcus Morris missed a jump shot, followed it up. They got a dunk. We came back down. We ran a set for Jordan Clarkson, and he came off and missed it. They rebounded it, and we came back on the defensive end, and we got a stop. They took it out on the sideline. Jason Tatum took the ball out, threw it to Marcus Smart in the short corner. He made a 3. We come back down, miss another shot, and then Tatum came down and went 94 feet, did a Euro step, and made a right-hand layup timeout. There you go.
And then the look he gave afterwards, like, yes, I just performed for you, and I can do that trick again if you want me to. It was really great to see. But obviously, that's a hidden talent of LeBron.
So don't ask him what happened, because all you're going to get is the regurgitated information.
God, could you imagine him like in like a couple's argument? Like, no, on this date in 1996, you did X and Y. And then 2 years later, on August 17th, you did this. And absolutely not.
Well, and photographic memories are different. Like, I used to say I had one because when I would study for tests and then I would go to take the test, it would help me remember where in my notes it was, like, on the page and where exactly, like, we were studying it. So therefore, I felt like it would help my timeline as far as my memory was concerned. So I could remember the way the page was laid out and, you know, how I wrote everything. So I thought that was kind of a photographic memory. Now, learning more about them, it's certainly not, but it did help, you know, me get organized. That is not a hidden talent.
I was going to say, is that your hidden talent?
No, absolutely not. That, you know, grades only go so far. Then you get out in the real world and all your test scores go out the window and it doesn't matter what you performed in school. No, I think spelling is my hidden talent. I don't think people appreciate spelling as much now because the computer obviously can correct you. But if you need to write anything, I mean, if you go to write a Mother's Day card or if you just go to write someone a note, you have to be able to spell, I think, or you kind of look foolish. And obviously now, yes, you can Google it quickly with your phone. But I think it has saved me a tremendous amount of time. The fact that growing up, I read a lot and it helped me with spelling. And so now I proofread things for people. I proofread, you know, website stuff. And I feel like it saves me personally a lot of time when it comes to sales stuff because I don't have to have someone double check my work. So that's, I would say, one of my hidden talents. How about you?
I would say, and I was trying to think of this because I'm pretty vocal about anything, humble brag about anything that I'm talented at. So I usually shout to the high heavens as far as that's concerned. But then I thought, I didn't grow up with guns, but I'm a pretty good shooter. I don't practice a lot, but when I do go, there's a place out in Fernandina's Yulee area called Amelia Shotgun Sports, and I've been out there a bunch, and just to shoot clays with my grandfather. I'd never done it before, and I did it well enough that the owner asked me to come back for tournaments and that I should enter into different tournaments that they have
nice.
There. And he started calling me Annie Oakley, and it remembered me whenever I would come out there repeatedly in order to shoot. I didn't grow up with guns, but I do own one now. And I guess that I could say that maybe all the video games that I played as a younger kid, from, you know, GoldenEye to maybe even Splinter Cell, helped me in actual shooting.
Did you play, those were ones at home, or did you like go to the arcades and, you know?
Oh, no. GoldenEye on 64 was probably one of the biggest game changers as far as video games are concerned. And then the Splinter Cell series, which I don't know, a lot of people might know the author Tom Clancy, who wrote a bunch of like crime and, you know, spy dramas and things like that. Well, he also wrote some scripts for video games as well. And those video games, that franchise is one of my favorite of all time. And it changed to the point where it changed my perspective on if I walked into a room, I was looking for lights to take out, and I was looking for places to put hidden cameras. And it's that sort of like, I guess, spy mentality, which sounds a little strange. But I want to say that that helped me maybe learn how to shoot better, because there's different points that you have to take in the middle of the game. Like, you can't make a lot of noise. You got to pause your breathing. You got to follow the shot, especially when it comes to shooting clay. And it's a great hobby, I guess. It's a good stress relief, too.
Interesting. I have never shot a gun, and I am okay if I go the rest of my life with being able to say that.
Well,
I know everybody's different. Some people absolutely really enjoy it. For me, it's not something I have any interest in, but I do appreciate that other people will, you know, go to the range and have a blast.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's like a respect. You have to respect a firearm, and there are, you know, thousands of people all across the United States that are very safe with them. I know it's kind of, you know, gun control is a hot topic issue around this country, but there are a lot of people who take gun ownership and gun responsibility very seriously. I'm one of them, but my dad has never been interested in shooting, ever. And it was my grandfather that, when he found out I was going to be living alone, he wanted me to be safe. And so he took me to the range, and he shot me how to, or not shot me, but he taught me how to.
This is what it's going to feel like if you ever use this thing.
But he taught me how to handle, you know, not only a shotgun, but a pistol, a rifle, and a revolver. Taught me how to clean them, and just an overall respect and safety for the firearm. He's a former Marine, so that I think he enjoyed teaching his granddaughter instead of like a grandson about
it. Well, I can spell firearm, and you can shoot it. So there you go. By the way, millennials are saving the frozen food industry, apparently. I find it hilarious that Chad Scott, in reading through our show prep materials, said, I hope none of you actually eat frozen food. You're better than that.
I did not respond to that.
Doesn't everyone have to have at least something in the freezer for the nights that either they're hungry after dinner, or they get home late, or they just need like something immediate? Don't you have to have like some sort of frozen food?
I keep a lot of frozen food. I would rather buy frozen food than fresh food, just because it goes to waste. And
yeah, I will say right now in my freezer, the only things there are one bottle of vodka, one bottle of whiskey, and deer meat. So
nice.
Because we just
moved. You ain't a shooter.
Yeah, somebody else shot that deer. But because we just moved, there's not a lot of frozen food. But I will say pizza is the all-time go-to for frozen food, right?
Yes. I'm trying to be healthier, so I only have the chicken crust.
Oh, yeah. But still, something along those lines.
Yeah, but I do. I always keep frozen chicken in my freezer. But there is a good meal kit that I wanted to give a shout out to. And it's called the Good Table Freezer to Plate Meals. And you legit take the frozen chicken out. It's a whole meal kit that you buy in like a box. But you take the frozen chicken out. You put down the rice. You pour a little bit of water in the pan. And it gives you like a sauce packet too. You take the frozen chicken. You put it right in there and pour the sauce over it. Cook it for 45 minutes and you have dinner.
Yeah,
no prep.
45 minutes. That's a while. I want to eat
no
like
defrosting.
Five sometimes.
It's none of that stuff. So it's if you're in a pinch and you need dinner and you haven't defrosted anything, and you know somebody screwed up and didn't take the chicken out earlier or something like that, those are so good.
All right. Well, good to know. There's also a fake pasta. It's really vegetables. It's by Bird's Eye. It's really it looks and tastes like pasta.
Yeah.
But it's actually vegetables. That's probably my real go-to.
Zucchini?
They have zucchini, they have lentils, they have a few different flavors, and they're all amazing. And I will say that's like the one snack that you trick yourself into thinking you're eating unhealthy when you really are actually
I have some of those in my freezer. I haven't tried them yet.
All right, we'll get it to sports gambling coming up next. You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Fenders Homes on 92.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Live from Leave Lauren Brooks and Styx Tyler Devitt making it all happen tonight for you. If you're tuning in for the results of the NBA lottery, draft lottery, well, ESPN is making you wait. They went to commercial right as the show started.
Of course.
So they are going to make you
pay those bills somehow.
Absolutely. They're going to make you hold your breath a little longer before they reveal. The Supreme Court yesterday struck down the ban on sports betting in New Jersey, which isn't necessarily going to change anything immediately for us here in Florida, but does it get you excited about the potential of what can happen now that that original act, or it was created in 1992, now that that was ruled unconstitutional?
Hell yeah, I love it. I think it instantly changes the landscape of sports in this country because it's such an archaic rule that was established to begin with at the federal level, and it was established in 1992. Las Vegas, Nevada, was grandfathered in, so they have been the only state to allow gambling, even though the rest of the globe allows sports gambling. And if you're an avid bettor, if you're an avid sports gambler, then you've known ways to bet on the action of different sporting events all over the globe. So it doesn't make any sense to send all that revenue outside of the United States instead of sending it to your state. And I think that this is where a lot of these states and a lot of these leagues immediately gained a ton of more revenue and value just simply by this law.
Now, when you go to Vegas, do you place any sports bets specifically?
Yes, but I need a lot of help doing it. The last time, usually when I do it, there's guys there that will help you and they'll assist you because even the betting rooms and the sports book rooms are incredible. They're like a sports fan dream come true. And if you've never had a chance to get out to one of these things, they basically have, you know, these super nice leather seats that are, it's a perfect viewing experience. They have large TVs everywhere with lines running all over the place. You can bet, depending on the location, you can bet right from the seat that you're sitting at, or you can go up to the table and place your bet there where they can probably give you a little bit more help. It's a fun environment, especially if you're a sports fan, especially if there's a lot of things going on at once. You know, the college football kickoff weekend, you know, Labor Day weekend, where there's usually a lot of really great games on, or, you know, NFL playoffs.
So what's the most that you've put down on a bet there?
The most I've put on a bet is like $20.
Okay.
It's not much at all. I spend much more on fantasy football than I do anything, but that will likely change once this start goes, because with this gambling, now that it's legal, it's up to the states to decide if they want to actually take part in it. And what remains to be seen is if you're going to have to bet in person or if you can bet through a mobile device, which is where I think that they should do it.
Most people are going to get in trouble, though, which is why I'm sure that that's part of, you know, them weighing the decision.
Well, I think it's a states' rights issue at this point now. So depending on your state and depending on the people that are representing you, they might take a more liberal approach. They might take a more conservative approach. But ultimately, sports gambling is just like any other thing you get into. It's a form of entertainment. You can take it responsibly or you can take it irresponsibly. I know that a lot of people will think that, you know, oh, this is just will increase, you know, addiction and people who are addicted to gambling. Well, if more people can do it, of course the numbers are going to increase. But it's just like alcohol. If you can't handle it responsibly, then don't do it. As long as you're not negatively affecting me or my life, I don't really care what you do with your life. And I know the state of Florida is not anywhere closer to making this legal for the state, but hopefully soon when they start seeing other states and how much revenue they're bringing in.
Well, and certainly it'll help places like Atlantic City that have been trying to establish facilities for this for years now and have been waiting for this decision to be able to go through.
They've already invested in it. They've invested in it for years waiting for this decision. So they'll be up and running in a matter of weeks. I've heard a rumor of up to 7 to 10 states could have this legal by football season. So it is drastically changing. And there are lots of states that are hopping on this bandwagon real quick.
Absolutely. Now, Tyler, have you ever been to Vegas or have you only placed bets in other ways?
I've been to Vegas probably like 30 or 40 times, but only like 3 or 4 times of gambling age. And I'm actually going to be there at the end of next month. I just scheduled a trip today.
Will you place sports bets while you're there?
Oh, of course.
Absolutely. Because
it's always been legal there, so that's not a big deal there.
Sure.
I'll probably spend like an entire day in a sports book.
And what's the maximum amount that you're willing to lose on any one game?
That is a little bit of private information.
Okay. Okay, what's the average amount you would say most of your friends that you're going with would put on a game?
If I'm going to the sports book in Vegas, I'll probably bring a couple $100 and I'll probably put at least 50 on a game. I mean, if you're going to put $20 on a game, it's going to be a 3-hour game. You got to put more than $20 on a game.
I'm just cheap.
Well, and I'm one of those people, sports gambling, whether it's legal or not, really won't change what I do.
Right.
But I have really always looked at the pictures when people go to Wembley Stadium for the Jaguars games in London. And I do think it's really exciting to have fans who could potentially win money and get to celebrate their team's victory all in one fell swoop. And it's legal, oh, by the way.
And they can bet at kiosk in Wembley Stadium.
Right. So I've always thought that part of it is kind of exciting. I don't necessarily think that being able to bet at any moment from your phone is always a good thing, because there are going to be people who can't handle that. And that's why,
it's your personal responsibility.
Yeah, most liquor stores aren't open 24 hours a day. You know, there is like at least a cutoff point. So maybe there should be some sort of regulations in place where you can't do it 24 hours a day.
You can do that with kind of the way that they do Bitcoin. So if you buy and sell Bitcoin right now, there's a certain app that you have to go to. And if they encourage you to use your cash bank account. So when you run out of cash, you're cut off. You're not like putting thousands of dollars on a credit card. And so there will have to be some kind of those placeholders put into these systems. That remains to be seen, but it's a personal responsibility, and it's an additional form of gambling that it adds an increase to revenue to states that in sports leagues that they've already embraced gambling to a certain effect. Fantasy football and March Madness are straight up sports gambling. There's no other way to put it. Now, actually, betting on lines is different than it's just another form of betting and strategy.
Yeah, well, with March Madness, I mean, most people, if they're doing one online, then it's just a free one. They're just trying to, you know, beat out other people and get to not have to wear the rompum like they did on the morning show. But I would agree with you with fantasy football. I think
College basketball would be dead without March Madness betting.
I don't know about the betting part, but certainly the bracket filling out
is fun.
Right,
office but pools,
yeah, fantasy
like
football.
That.
I fall into the cheap category also. I have never put money on fantasy football until last year when I entered. I said yes to a league, and then after the fact found out that it was one you had to pay.
Of course it's for money.
I've never been in one for money. I've always been in ones where it's just for bragging rights. And so I almost said, no, I don't want to be in it, because to me, it really is a waste of money. Like, I would always rather not lose the $50 than win the $300 potentially. Like, for me, the risk versus reward is not there. But that's not how everyone is. But it's why I would never become addicted to sports gambling, because I personally could never in a million years imagine losing more than, like, even $20. I feel like right now, me handing you $20 would really annoy me. And that's, I feel like, how it is. Now, granted, I understand you can win a lot of money, but for me, it's not how it works. But could you ever potentially become addicted to it?
No, it's a form of entertainment. And then, like I said, it's like with any other thing that you participate in life. If you can't handle it, if it becomes an addiction for you, then you have to seek treatment. And then you have to do what you got to do in order to make sure that you're not putting you or your family in a financial risk, a financial situation. You could do that with any purchase that you make in life. You could buy, you know, too many clothes. You could buy too many shoes, too many handbags. It's a form of entertainment that you are going to put $100 on a game, maybe a game that you wouldn't normally watch, but maybe you're at a bar with a bunch of your friends, and so you're going to pull out your phone, and you're going to say, well, if I'm here, if I have to watch this stupid game, then maybe I can win a little bit of money on it, and you'll watch it until the end. And I think that's where sports gambling will help a lot of these leagues that have struggled with ratings, which in all sports leagues have experienced some sort of ratings dropping over the past few years as viewer habits change. But with sports gambling, I think that it's going to help in an increase in ratings, specifically with games that won't have that much of a mass appeal. And it's sort of like fantasy football. Like, you know, I watch games that I have no business watching, but because I have a couple players on my fantasy team playing in that game, then I'm more apt to watch it. And just like with gambling, you're more apt to watch a game that you think that you can win some cash on. And if you don't, then, you know, you still probably had fun. You probably didn't have fun losing, but you still probably enjoyed that aspect of watching the game and the highs and the lows that come from it.
Well, it certainly intensifies and can add excitement to it. And I do think that it can pull in groups of people who may not have been interested in the past. Women, I think, would be a group this could fall under. I don't know a lot of females other than maybe fantasy football who are involved in sports gambling. But I think if they want a little money, then all of a sudden they become far more interested and excited about the next game.
Yeah, it could be.
You know, if your girlfriend had even $5 on the Cavs winning tonight, she's going to watch, like you said, until the very end of the game, or at least until the game is decided, versus waking up tomorrow and maybe knowing who won and maybe not even caring.
Are they going to cover the over, the under? It's all those different things that come into play. And I was listening to a theory. I think it was Pro Football Talk that was talking about the theory that in the middle of games, say there's so much downtime between like a football play, you know, from 30 seconds to close to a minute, and they could cut off betting as far as that's concerned. Like, what play are they going to run next? And you could place a bet on your mobile phone as far as what play do you think that they're going to come out of the timeout and run. And if you they'll cut it off, they'll cut betting off for that specific bet. After they break huddle or something like that. So there's going to have to be a bunch of rules.
On Bovada, you can actually do that like right now. Like literally when the Jags play the Steelers in the playoffs, you could say, I think the Steelers are going to run the ball on first down.
But that's technically an offshore.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the problem with that, which makes this whole legalizing, it's not really legalized now, but the repealing of the ban is that if you did place a bet like on the Cavs-Celtics game tonight and win, on Bovada, you have to wait like 4 weeks to get a check. So whereas if it's legal in Florida, which would take a while, and you can go to a betting parlor, you can get your cash immediately.
And then I've also heard that if they suspect you of cheating or anything like that, then they can just cut off your account and there's no recourse for you.
I think it'll be interesting to see how long it takes Florida to get involved. Because the maps that I looked at with, you know, the projection of states that were interested in the next 5 years, Florida was not among them. So
yeah.
At least as of now, it doesn't look
they've
like it's really going
to affect.
They've
never submitted any kind of legal action in order to try.
Yeah, it doesn't look like
it's going
to affect us for the here and now. But, it'll be interesting to see if you start to hear of more people from here go up to New Jersey, to Atlantic City.
Imagine if Georgia makes it.
Sure.
Has it in installed. And you have people crossing the state lines in order to place these bets. I bet Florida would pick it up if they saw that happening.
All right. We will talk a little Jaguars and a dose of Daly's Place next. With Jaguars.com digital reporter Ashlyn Sullivan, you're listening to Helmets and Heels Built by Dream Finders Homes on 92.5 FM. Lauren Brooks here for Dream Finders Homes. Looking to live close to historic Fernandina and Amelia Island? Look no further than the Dream Finders community, Plummer Creek in Yulee. With new homes in the low 200s, Plummer Creek offers access to A-rated schools and conveniently located to I-95. New lots have just been released, which will be the last phase of this adorable community. Plummer Creek is perfect for families, complete with a pool, playground, and a new kayak launch is coming soon. For more information, head to dreamfindershomes.com.
Jaguars football by women, for women, and men. Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Well, the ping pong balls are in the machine. But still, no one has won the lottery pick. No. You know why? Because they still have not revealed the order.
Nope, another commercial.
They are making you wait for the long haul tonight. But certainly we'll keep you posted as time goes on. We're about to get to a dose of Daly's Place with Ashlyn Sullivan, Jaguars.com digital reporter and host. But real quick, Blythe, you just went to Daly's Place. How was the concert?
It was awesome. Had a good time. Post Malone, 21 Savage, they were here last week. I think it was a sold out concert. Post Malone, I've seen him before when he opened up for Future. So it was a good show. Went over to Intuition for a little bit too. Watched some baseball over there, which was fun. And it was just a, you know, kind of a, an, I don't want to say an easy night, but it was a night to kick off our vacation because a girlfriend of mine, we went to that concert on Thursday night. Then we went to the Players on Friday. Then we left immediately after that to go to Daytona / Ormond Beach area for a little family weekend. So it was a good long weekend.
It's funny. My parents went to see Steely Dan and Doobie Brothers Sunday night, and my mom asked me if Intuition had wine, and I couldn't really tell from the website. And then I tried calling, but I couldn't get through to anybody. So I was like, well, she does not drink beer whatsoever. She's wine only. So she was like, well, we could either risk it or try somewhere else. So I don't know where they ended up going. I know they went to the concert.
To the Post Malone concert?
No. They went to see Steely Dan and Doobie Brothers Sunday night. Yeah, they did not go to see Post Malone.
That's the crowd at Post Malone was very interesting.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Well, and there's a ton of fun stuff coming up with Daily's Place. Certainly the Post Malone show was a lot of fun. And then there's a few that were just recently announced with Logic and Wiz Khalifa.
Yep.
And then there's somebody I've never heard of. Can you pronounce Ray?
I think it's Sarmund.
Okay.
Right, Tyler? I don't know. I like his music. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, though.
Okay. I'm going to guess Ray Sarmund is what it looks like. But so that's pretty exciting that both of those were announced. And then there's going to be 5 concerts in 7 days.
Wow.
Around the 4th of July holiday. That is a lot of shows.
I'm going to look up how to phonetically say his name.
All right. Well, you do that. I will let you know that there's also a bunch of other fun concerts coming up because I'm trying to decide around Brian's birthday if we should go see Counting Crows or OAR. Now, granted, it's his birthday, so he gets to choose. But I feel like both are really, could be really fun shows. What would you say?
Sharmud.
Sharmud is how you say that.
Sharmud.
All right. Well, there
is how one person on Twitter says it. So.
Alrighty then. What would you choose between Counting Crows and OAR? Have you seen either one before?
No, I have not. OAR.
OAR.
Yeah.
See, I have friends who saw Counting Crows in Nashville when we were there. Oh yeah, there's a little Counting Crows.
They just have a couple songs, right?
See, I have a few that that I like. But here we go. Here's tonight's Peterbrook Chocolate Heel artist. This artist is coming to Daily's Place.
Will be better than the last. I can't remember.
Text into the 1010 XL text line driven by Duval Ford 641-1010. Guess either the name of the artist or the name of the song, and you win tonight's Peter
I do. Do you remember in the, I think it was the State of the Franchise that the Jaguars mentioned that they're gonna start having volunteer groups or charity organizations come to the stadium, and if they volunteer, then they earn a certain amount of revenue towards their charitable goal. And a representative, Sarah from Delaware North, she reached out and she said that May 24th is when they're having a private event to invite all of these charities to find out more about how they can work more with the Jaguars, specifically on game day, so they can earn more revenue and earn more fundraising opportunities with for their charity and with the Jaguars. So it's I'll send out a tweet if you want to register for it, or you can just actually go to jaguars.com/Delaware North fundraising in order to RSVP. But if you have a charitable organization here in town and you want to get more involved and potentially raise more money for your organization, then definitely check that out.
Yeah, that's awesome. And tomorrow night, by the way, Odessa, have you ever heard of
yes.
that band? Okay, so I have a bunch of friends who cannot wait for that concert tomorrow. They've seen them in other places. They, you know, go to all these music festivals and they've seen them before, and they literally are so excited, especially because this is a smaller venue than,
right.
you know, those giant music festivals. So this will
be... Not a festival fan.
Absolutely fantastic. You're not a festival fan?
Oh, no.
I don't know about the ones. I'm not an EDM music lover, so I've never been to one of those. I'm also probably slightly too old to go to one of those. But for the people who go to them, I know that like they absolutely love it. I loved Superfest when it was here as, you know, 2-day-long music festivals or 2 days of 2 days long of music in that festival. So I thought that was
fantastic. I just like going home and sleeping in my own bed after
yeah,
a concert
which
is
that
done.
Part I did. You know, it's all day long.
Well,
but then
some
you
of these music
home.
Festivals that you had, you're camping out there all week and yeah, or absolutely. For a few days. I don't like that part.
All right. Time now to welcome in Ashlyn Sullivan, Jaguars.com digital reporter and host. Hello, Ashlyn. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are fantastic. Thanks. All right. So let's take a look into these hip hop shows. How did you guys decide that you needed more hip hop shows coming to Daily's Place?
We definitely decided because Post Malone was such a huge success, sold out show 2 weeks in advance of him even coming on stage. And it was a huge hit. I know a lot of people had fun at that show. So we're expecting a similar crowd for Logic when he comes to town June 23rd. And then also just announced today Wiz Khalifa is coming August 15th. So they're expecting sold out shows for both of them. So definitely get your tickets soon for that.
Absolutely. And there's going to be 5 concerts in 7 days around 4th of July. That's a lot. How can you guys handle all those?
Yeah, so it's going to be a busy weekend, but they're really trying to amp up the holiday and amp up all the visitors that will be in Jacksonville to come to Daily's Place for the 4th of July weekend. So the weekend before 4th of July, we have 3 concerts in a row, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. And then the weekend after 4th of July, we have 2 more concerts. 3 Doors Down will be playing. It'll be busy, but it'll be a good time.
What about the summer camps that you guys just announced that are coming on to Flexfield?
Yeah, so Daily's Place, everyone just associates Daily's Place with just concerts, but a lot of camps and a lot of youth football is going on the Flex Field right behind Daily's Place. So Marcus Pollard, director of youth football, he's having summer camps the first 2 weekends in July. It's kind of modeled after the NFL Combine where all the kids will get to go through drills. They have alumni coaches and alumni players from the Jaguars there coaching them up. So what a cool opportunity for kids to be playing on a Jaguars practice field getting coached by former coaches. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Now, Ashlyn, are you doing a little bowling tonight?
I myself am not bowling, but we are here covering the event. We actually just talked to Blake Bortles, Calais Campbell, and Miles Jack, and we've heard that Calvin Smith is going to take the crown tonight. You know, he already is a pretty good bowler.
Really? I would never have guessed
that.
Yeah. I guess
they said it's kind of biased because he goes every Sunday to practice. So this is his night. His night to show up.
Ah, well, he is a competitive person, so that part doesn't surprise me.
Honestly very cool though. We cover community events almost every Tuesday, and this is by far the biggest one I've seen player wise. There's almost 15 players here supporting Calais, and when I asked all of them, they said when Calais Campbell tells you to come to something, you come to something.
Oh,
so it just goes the leadership he has on this team. That I mean, Blake Bortles, Leonard Frenette, Marcel Darius, Tanika Ngakwe, you name it, they're here. So that definitely doesn't happen at every event.
Now, a lot of these Jaguar players, their chemistry between each other, we saw that last season. Do you sort of see that still evolving in this offseason, especially at a charitable event tonight? It seems like their chemistry hasn't missed a beat.
Oh, yeah. You can just tell how excited they are to be back together. And they keep saying there's unfinished business. You can just tell the camaraderie they have. And really, you've seen it with the new guys, the rookies, how they have just, I see them eating lunch together, and I see them really becoming one as a team in just a week, not even a week. So it's pretty cool to see that. They're definitely ready to get back to playing some football.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of Telvin Smith, he was on the NFL's top 100 players list. He found himself at number 67. You think he's excited about that? You think he feels like he should be a little higher on that list?
I know he was really excited and honored. I mean, he said how cool it was that the players voted on that and how honored he was to be in the top 100. But knowing this team, not even just Telvin, they want to be in the top 10, all of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Denise Ngakwe, he was in the 80s, and he said, I want to be way slower than that. So I think they're happy, they're honored, but I would think Telvin would want to be, like, probably in the 30 range there.
Yeah, I can understand that. Now, you got to participate in, well, at least hang out with the guys as they were going through the rookie minicamp. What were some of your takeaways from this past weekend?
Oh, my takeaways. I got the opportunity to interview all of them, which was very cool to see them in a media standpoint right off the practice field. I'm really rooting for Willard Cripson, the offensive lineman out of NC State. His story is so cool to me, and he, to me, was the most genuine and the most excited to be part of an NFL team. I know he had some off-the-field issues, but he is so past that. He is so ready to be a Jaguar. He was very, very humble, and he came up to me after. He goes, man, I love interviews. I love talking to you guys and being a part of the media. And I was like, wow, I've never heard that in my entire life.
So especially not from a rookie.
Stood out to me. Exactly, yeah. He was very cool. And also the punter, Logan Cook, I was so surprised how he held himself. And he was talking about how he knows he's just a punter, but he really wants to add assets to this team. And with how important special teams has been for this team during free agency and now the draft, he knows his importance. And he definitely is ready to work. Just a punter, which was pretty cool.
Absolutely. Now, Ashlyn, you mentioned how when Calais tells the guys they need to do something, then they need to do it. Well, Taven Bryan did say, the first round pick did say in his media press conference that if Calais wants donuts or if any of the veterans want donuts, he'll get them, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Taven is a very confident person, but I was asking him, you know, what's it going to be like when you come for veteran camp and you're in a practice line with Malik Jackson and Calais Campbell and all those guys? And he was saying, I'm not intimidated at all. I'm ready to work. And he said, think how fast I'll learn with guys like that behind me telling me every rep what I'm doing and what I'm doing wrong.
Awesome. We'll have so much fun at the bowling event tonight. And certainly thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you next
week. Of course. I'll see you next week. Thank you.
All right. Sounds good. That is Ashlyn Sullivan, Jaguars.com digital reporter and host. Really fun, I'm sure, for her to get to talk to all these rookies right off the bat.
Definitely.
Before they, you know, really understand that the media is not always there to help them. And that, you know, they come in with such a fresh perspective. They're just excited to be here. And no, of course, the media is always there to prop them up, right? We never say anything negative whatsoever around here.
As long as you're winning.
All right, coming up next, Bly's going to tell you all about the royal wedding and try and convince me to watch and to pay attention. That's next on Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes on 92.5 FM. We don't care.
We're driving Cadillacs. Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome back into Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. My name is Blythe Burnley. I'm going to join alongside Lauren Brooks. Donna Murphy has the night off. And I know that people are probably glued to their televisions watching the NBA draft lottery ping pong ball mess that's taken 45 minutes to start.
I am not sure people are glued for that.
Sarcasm. There's a hint of sarcasm there. But something that I'm not sarcastic about, that I will absolutely be glued to the television for, is this upcoming royal wedding that's happening on Saturday starting at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. A lot of area, you know, not area, but, you know, NBC, ABCs of the world. Some of these stations are getting started as early as 4:30 in the morning to start with coverage of this royal wedding.
Remind me when they got engaged, like how long ago that was? Because it doesn't seem like it's been a year.
They've been dating for close to 2 years, but they got engaged probably, I think, a little more than 6 months ago.
Okay, so this is fast.
Yeah, well, they've been dating for a couple years, so I think whenever, you know,
but royal... But fast for a royal wedding.
No, not necessarily. No? Anytime you have a royal wedding, there's a lot of things, protocols and stuff that you have to get, you know, sort of approved through by the queen. And I'm sure that they have a staff of probably 50 people that are planning every detail of this wedding. And there's a lot of, you know, tradition that's involved with it. They are getting married at Windsor Castle. It was founded, and this is one of the things that I love about this, because I've followed the royal family since I was a little girl. And, you know, I was entranced with Princess Diana. And then when she tragically died in that car crash years ago, I remember still to this day where I was when I saw William and Harry, her two sons, walking behind her casket in the funeral procession. And it was really, really heartbreaking. So I followed these two boys through their into men, and even William, you know, he is the second line, or the second in line to the throne. And it sounds so crazy because I watch Game of Thrones too. So even to hear, you know, the words like heir to the throne and second in line to the throne, it's just sort of crazy that this still exists in the modern day. But I'm absolutely obsessed with it. Are you going to watch it all?
So the only reason that I would pay any attention is actually my friend who I mentioned earlier in the show, who passed away, unfortunately, last week after a really valiant battle with metastatic breast cancer. Mm. So she absolutely loved Princess Diana, like, was devastated when she mm-hmm. died, and always had a crush on William yep. when we were younger. And so now hearing you talk about, you know, all of the different, you know, royal people that will be there, and just certainly the extravaganza that will go on, I think I'll have to tune in for just a little bit to see the spectacle, but almost like when you will say, like, I just watched the highlights, that's mm-hmm. kind of how I'll right. be, is I just need to see kind of what everybody's wearing and how big, how large of a wedding it is.
Well, it's actually going to be a little bit smaller according to royal standards. There's only going to be 600 wedding guests
at
the church.
Oh, my word.
Only 600.
600, okay.
I think in comparison, William and Kate, who they got married years before, they just had their third child together. Right. So they, I think they had more than double that at their wedding. And so they're getting married at Windsor Castle. It was founded in the 11th century.
But by the way, 600, like, no one has 600 people at their wedding
normally.
Well,
it's a lot of diplomats. They've also also done a lot of outreach as far as the party afterwards, the reception afterwards. There's a reception that they've invited, you know, about 2,600 people, and some of them are, you know, people who meant a lot of. Have played a large role in their charity. They're both very, Megan and Harry are both very involved with charities worldwide, and they always have been. And that's part of the draw, I think, that they said whenever Harry and Megan first met, they met on a blind date. And it was that sort of draw in.
Can it really be a blind date if he's a prince?
Well, they have a mutual friend, and they said, Megan, we're going to introduce you to someone. And I don't know how you keep that kind of information from someone, but it's kind of cool that like an American girl is becoming a princess, a real life princess. This is something that Disney freaks like myself have obsessed about since we were little girls, and so to see this happening in real life, it's a huge step, I think, for just the monarchy in general. I was listening to different comparisons because she's a biracial woman who has been once divorced, and so she's marrying into a royal family that is. They said 500 years ago, Prince Harry could have gotten beheaded for marrying a biracial girl. And the fact that this is happening, she's going to be the first biracial member of the royal family that the monarchy has ever seen. And so it's sort of
also, by the way, the most attractive, I think, in the family. She immediately becomes the most attractive.
Well, Kate too. Kate's
attractive,
Kate's
but not as attractive as Meghan.
Well, it's sort of, I guess, an interesting comparison between the two, because I've always thought I William, of course, is very handsome, but Harry to me has
William
always had.
Used to be handsome. I don't know if he still is.
Well, compared to the rest of his family, he's pretty handsome. looking at Charles, his father, which is first in line to the throne. He definitely got Diana's genes as far as that's concerned. But I've always really liked Harry because he has the personality, he has the spunk. He is very involved as far as charities all over the globe. He served in the military. He was a very talented helicopter pilot, not the type that, you know, just goes into the military and then just doesn't do anything. He was considered one of the top helicopter pilots in his unit, and I think he's been to Afghanistan twice, and
so he's way cooler than William.
Yeah, so he has he has the personality and the perks without the responsibility. And I think that's what a good selling point for him in general. But the two of them together, I think that their brand and their awareness, they're going to bring so much awareness to charities all over the globe. And you can see that this is going to be something, I mean, at least for myself, this is something I'm going to obsess with for probably years to come, because William and Kate are just, you know, they have so much responsibility, and it's cool to follow them as far as, you know, their personalities and where their little family goes, because they're just, you know, the cutest thing ever. But I think that this is much must watch.
Now, there's drama with her dad, the fact that he's not going, and I guess he told TMZ he wasn't going because
that
of a
heart issue.
That
hasn't been confirmed yet. But Megan was born to, she has two parents, just like everybody else. but they were divorced, I think, when she was 6 years old. And her mom was a yoga teacher, and her dad was a Hollywood lighting director. And he's since retired, but they have both she has a great relationship with both of them. But I guess what happened, and this is unconfirmed reports, but a photographer was hired to take pictures of him getting ready and, you know, the wedding process of getting fitted for his suit and things like that. And I don't think that the royal family approved of that happening. So he didn't want to cause, this is all rumor, but he didn't want to cause a further distraction to the day's events, and so has said, TMZ says anyways, that he's not going to be there. I guarantee he's going to be there, because it'll make more noise if he's not there than anything, you know, any kind of fitted suit picture.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, we break into this royal wedding coverage. We do have the lottery order now, correct, Tyler?
We have the order. It's the Phoenix Suns, number one overall. Number two, the big surprise of the night is the Sacramento Kings, who have like an 18% chance of even entering the top three. They're picking number two. And Jeff Prosser's Atlanta Hawks, number three. And the biggest disappointment, I would say, and the biggest takeaway, is number four, Memphis Grizzlies, who, I mean, they were benching Marc Gasol at halftime of games because they were trying to tank so hard. And it turned out they got the number four pick. So they had the second worst record in the league, and they're picking fourth. So that's really disappointing if you're a Grizzlies fan, which there probably is nobody listening who's a Grizzlies fan.
So who do you think the Suns will take with that number one overall pick?
Number one, it's probably a lock for DeAndre Ayton, the big man out of Arizona.
Right. Okay. And he's the one that had the rumors going on of receiving money.
Correct.
And everyone was taunting him during games last year. Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Got it. All right, so that I think concludes the royal wedding discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I can still talk about it if you want to.
I have one further question. Are they planning on having children? Has that been discussed?
I'm sure they will.
Okay, because she's what, 36?
Yeah, she's actually
so
3 years older than him. So, but it, I think modern times they could find either have them biologically or adopt them. I there's no reports to that, but I would imagine they would do that fairly soon. Or if they take the fill-in. The charitable route, they would probably travel the globe first, do that, raise some awareness for joint charities, things like that, because both of them have been involved in charities their entire lives. I think Megan actually made a name for herself when she was just 12 years old. She saw a commercial, a dishwashing commercial that had set that it was just women complaining about, you know, dishwashing soap and how it ruined their hands. And so she wrote into Procter & Gamble and said that it shouldn't just be women in this commercial. It should be men, too. And everybody should have to wash the dishes. And it made such a ruckus back then that Procter & Gamble actually changed that commercial in order to show both genders instead of women.
Wow.
She's just a smart, beautiful kid from, you know, from a very obviously a very early age, and then to now to what she is, and you know, she made it as far, I guess kind of made it as far as an American actress is concerned. She was acting on the show Suits. I never watched that show, but that's apparently how they met. And Prince Harry actually visited her a couple times on set. They kept this relationship secret for like 6 months, even despite like him visiting on set and them, you know, hanging out. I think I read that their third date was in the country Botswana, like looking up at the stars, because it was the only place that they could really find privacy. But when they did go out in public, not public, but whenever they were seen in public, their close-knit of friends kept that very, very tight-lipped, which I think is cool.
Yeah, and it makes more sense that he would come here and it wouldn't necessarily get out, because we're not as obsessed with royalty or the royal family.
Yeah, I think absolutely we are.
Americans?
Yes, absolutely.
Let me say, there's not necessarily paparazzi designated to follow them in America, whereas certainly in their whether it's England per se or all of the United Kingdom, I think there are paparazzi devoted to them. I mean, that's obviously how Diana died.
Wherever they live, you know, for sure, because she actually died in France. She didn't die in the UK, and according to the car crash and where it happened. But I've heard plenty of British people say that it's, you know, this royal family, like no one in the UK cares. It's all the Americans that care. I mean, you have, you know, NBC and ABC, they're broadcasting starting 5 hours beforehand. There are NFL broadcasts that don't start 5 hours before kickoff.
Wait, so what time is the wedding? You're going to wake up at 7 and watch what time is the
after ceremony
wedding?
Starts at 7 a.m. So I'll probably wake up at around 6 and catch some of the pregame coverage. Is what I'll call it.
We talked about sports gambling earlier. Well, is there any sort of betting going on with this royal wedding?
I'm sure there is. You can place a prop bet on everything. You can place a prop bet on how long someone sings a national anthem, for God's sake. So I'm assuming there's going to be plenty of prop bets to be placed for this.
Is there anything that you absolutely need to see besides maybe
her dress?
Yeah,
her dress is obviously the big thing. And I think just from a historical perspective, you know, they're getting married in a castle that has former King Henry VIII is buried there, and where they're getting married is built in the 11th century. Just that sort of history, I think, is so beautiful to see, and it's such a, but between them and what they sort of represent and how they met, it does feel like a love story. And I think in today's world where you have so much bad news just everywhere, it's a nice story to sort of latch on to, that, you know, this is the reason why you whatever you do in life, you do it for love. And is you know, sort of hokey as that sounds, like that's something to look forward to. And I think it's a good, probably a distraction for a lot of people who read a lot of bad news every day.
I've got some prop bets here for you guys.
Yeah.
What color will Queen Elizabeth wear? She is even money to wear green.
Green?
Boy,
okay,
was 3-1.
I would have guessed like purple. Okay.
Who will attend? Elton John, 50-1. Roy McIlroy at 3-1. Serena Williams, 5-1. Barack Obama, 5-1.
He's not going.
What Prince Harry will look like?
A redheaded.
Will he be clean
shaven
or will he have the beard? Yes or no?
It
seems like even money for both. And what kind of car will Meghan Markle arrive in? Bentley.
A chariot. it.
A Bentley is 5 to 6, and Rolls Royce is 4 to 5.
What happened to the chariot? That's how Kate came in. She came in on a chariot. Which,
well, she probably doesn't want to do what she did.
Oh, no way. Put me on a chariot. But former President Obama, he can't go because you have to, I guess it's like royal I don't know, like a sort of an understanding between governments that you can't invite a former president unless you invite the current president. And they definitely don't want the Trumps there at their wedding.
Yeah.
So the Obamas can't
Well, go. Certainly, yeah, certainly you don't want to steal the show. And I think, you know, sometimes certain people have a tendency to try and make it about mm-hmm. themselves. And, you know, no matter whether that ends up being her dad not being able to go or whatnot.
No, he'll definitely be able to go. There's no other. That's the first report that I've heard that there's any kind of tension between, you know, the family. And
Well, you have certainly followed it closely enough that I believe you.
Except for her half-sister. I know she's estranged from her half-sister.
I found out that the royal wedding was happening this Saturday when I heard the drill talk about it. And I was like, what? This is already happening? I feel like they just got engaged. But I guess, you know, 6 or 7 months is plenty of time, like you said, when other people
are... Women who have gotten married a lot quicker than that, and they don't have half as a quarter, a fraction of what they all have going on.
All right, coming up next, Blake Bortles deleted his Twitter account. We will get into that as well as tell you the best place in Jacksonville to get dessert. That's all next on Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes on 92.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
How many hours a day, Blythe, would you say that you are on Twitter?
I try to only do 5 or 10 minutes at a time, at max.
Per day?
Per day, I would say probably, I'm actually tracking how long I spend on social media this week.
You can do that?
Yeah, it's called rescue time. Just so you can see where you waste time on the internet so you can cut back on it. And
so it's not just Twitter, it's the other social media apps as well.
Any kind of time wasting, you know, even if I'd spend a lot of time on Reddit as well. And so just websites like that, I want to try to cut back on, except for designated slots of time. So they say if you're going to go on social media, you should only go on like 20 to 25 minutes at a time. Max, and like set a timer for yourself. Like that's how I guess addicting these platforms are.
Have you learned how many hours?
I get my
you
first
spend?
Report next week, so next I'm sure week. It's going to be a lot. Which is why I'm consciously this week trying to go on less. But I can't tell you how many times that I've looked up and a couple hours have gone by and I've spent it on social media.
Interesting.
It usually happens during football season though.
Yeah, that it doesn't. Social media, I would say, is not necessarily a time waster for me. It's more usually filling in, like if the game goes to a commercial break. Mm. I'll, you know, flip through, say, Instagram or something. But Twitter, obviously, for working purposes, I have on during every show. I'll check it before I go to bed, when I wake up, that kind of thing. But that, to me, is not necessarily wasting time. That really is, you know, focusing on what's going on around the world of sports. But Blake Bortles, Jaguars quarterback Blake Bortles, decided to delete his Twitter account today. At least it's no longer there, so that's what we assume happened, that it wasn't a fluke. And it comes kind of in the wake of some, what I would say, kind of shady stuff that was said about him last week when stories that were really incorrect came out about the fact that he left his wallet and keys in his truck when it was happening during a house party. In reality, he was playing, I think, volleyball in the pool at Brandon Linder's house.
And it was during the day.
Yeah, it was during the day. Somebody else went to move his car.
And it was all the offensive linemen that were there. It wasn't necessarily a house party. Like when you say the phrase house party, you have a certain image in your head.
Absolutely. And if they're legitimately like playing water volleyball to get in shape, or playing volleyball in the pool, that's actually a great thing. Yeah, and bonding. Right. And Cody Kessler was there too, the new Jaguars backup quarterback. So as it turns out, somebody else went in to move his truck and didn't end up locking it. And then, of course, the random person kind of stumbles upon the fact that the truck's unlocked and tries to get it out. And
random person stumbles upon it.
Well,
they're watching.
I think that kind of contributed, that whole incident and the misreporting that happened.
Who reported it? Or did people just probably jump to conclusions, I think?
I don't remember who originally had the news story. I just remember reading house part. He, you know, left
TMZ.
The keys in the house part. Okay, it was TMZ. I was going to say possibly them because they're always the ones who report
everything.
I was
wondering what kind of adjectives were used by what news source, and TMZ makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and so it comes kind of, you know, like I said, a week after that. I think that probably contributed because he's probably thinking, to himself, I'm wasting my time reading reports that aren't even accurate about myself. And oh, by the way, there's lots of people who say negative things about me and about my teammates on social media. I'm just going to go ahead and quit this Twitter thing. And I think he still has Instagram. I didn't even check after today.
He's not very active on it.
No, he's not very active.
In like 8 months.
And Instagram is certainly very different than Twitter. You're not going to have, you can also control who follows you on Instagram.
And you can turn off your comments on different photos.
Yeah, technically you can make yourself private on Twitter, but then why have it, I guess, would be some people's philosophy. But Instagram is certainly very different. Regardless, do you think that you would ever get rid of your Twitter account?
Twitter, no, but I have ditched other social media platforms. I got rid of Snapchat. I deleted the Facebook app and Messenger app from my phone just because it's a time suck. And I found, we actually talked about this last week with Hacker, that it's the less time I spend on social media, the more money I make. And I think that that can be said for a lot of different professions.
Well, and I wouldn't necessarily say the more money I make, but I would say the happier I am. One of the main reasons I got rid of Facebook is it seemed like, and I know this isn't reality, but it seemed like everyone I know or I knew would go on vacation at the same time. So I'd be working and I'd be scrolling through pictures of people in the Virgin Islands or in Hawaii. And all of a sudden, what goes through me? Negative, you know, jealous thoughts like, oh, I have to be at work. When in reality, I like my job, whatever it was at the time. And I don't, as long as I didn't see those pictures, then I no longer was jealous. So it would be that. Then it would be other times, yeah, people could contact you that you didn't necessarily really want contacting you, but it's so easy through social media versus forcing them to actually get your phone number or two different things. So I found that for me personally, emotionally, I was no longer feeling those thoughts of like my life isn't stacking up to other people's.
The same thing can happen on Instagram though too.
And it can, I guess the way I use Instagram is not where I'm on it a lot. It's usually something I check maybe twice a day at the most. I'm not somebody who like every 5 minutes is refreshing the feed. To me, it's much more of a people posting pictures of the good times in their life. And yes, sometimes it's on vacation, but I feel like it's more over just their kids, you know, silly faces that day. Or sometimes, you know, I post something about my friend today who I lost last week. You know, it's kind of filling people in on what's going on somewhat, but it's not nearly as obtrusive to me as Facebook is. That's why I at least got rid of Facebook.
I think they're both kind of the same to me, just with what people put out there, that you always see the highlights on social media. And that's what I particularly like about Twitter, is that Twitter to me is more of the negative things in life. And so I like Instagram and Twitter are my favorite platforms. But like I said, I got rid of the Facebook app for my phone. I got rid of Messenger. I deleted Snapchat altogether, so I don't even check that platform anymore. It's just about, you know, trying to find whatever makes you happy, whatever adds to your happiness instead of taking it away. I think that that's probably the platforms that you should use, or just don't use it at all.
Tyler, you're a millennial for sure. Does social media ever affect you negatively?
Negatively? Ooh. I think we all get affected by, I hate using this term, FOMO. Mm-hmm. You see things that get you envious, but that's just life in general.
Fear
you're
going to
get jealous. You're going to get jealous of things your friends are doing always, you know, whether you hear about it or you see it visually on Instagram or Facebook. No, I don't think so. I still use Snapchat. I almost never go on Facebook. I don't really see a use for it. And really the only one I use is Twitter and Instagram. So I use Twitter a lot only for sports. So.
Right.
And that's how I use it too. I could never get rid of mine for the sheer fact that I really have no idea how I would get all my sports news condensed the way that Twitter does it. I only follow, I think it's like 200 people, and there are certain people that are muted in there. I just don't want to unfollow because I don't want to be
muted. Oh yeah, I have so many people muted. If I haven't responded to you in like 6 months, you're muted.
But so I love the way Twitter, I feel like going back to the conversation we started at the top about LeBron James and the photographic memory, I do remember things that I see on Twitter far more so than I remember things that I just read on a website. Mm-hmm. For some reason, the way that the information is presented, I can remember, like, if you say something like, oh, well, I saw, like, for instance, Tyler retweeted somebody named TJ Quinn earlier, I think his name was. I've never heard of this guy, but I really liked what he had to say about the Robinson Cano suspension. So now I can remember, oh, yeah, what he said about how Major League Baseball will make sure that they prove that they didn't just take something like a diuretic, but it actually was covering up a drug. I feel like if I read that on a website, I wouldn't remember who tweeted it, nor really what they said. It just all kind of runs together. But for some reason with Twitter, especially like the stat graphics, that helps me to remember those. So I think you get to choose, you know, if it is a platform that you feel like it's helping you or that you feel like you enjoy. And I know like Prosser doesn't use Twitter at all, but at least he says he doesn't have a Twitter account. But Tyler, I have often wondered if he has kind of a ghost account.
He's got a burner. I think he
does too, because which is fine. You can have whatever you want. And if people were suddenly starting to be super negative to me on Twitter, for instance, I would probably, you know, start one of those too. Not that people have been negative to him, but that's why he doesn't have it, because A, he doesn't want to say something negative that he shouldn't have said, and B, he probably doesn't want all the, you know, people yapping and stuff. But so I always thought, though, that he must have some sort of something, because he'll know everything that's been said on Twitter.
He does. He references it very often.
Yeah, and so I've always been like, in the mornings, I'm like, come on, man. I do think that there's, like, something out there. But I think it's actually really good for Blake himself because of all the different negative stuff that's out there. Certainly constructive criticism can be great, but someone constantly bashing you or multiple people constantly bashing you, I think that absolutely can damage your self-confidence. And if you're a quarterback in the NFL, you need all the confidence you can get.
Yeah, but he said for a while that he never checks Twitter. So him deleting it, I think, is just a progress step. If you never check it and you never use it, then what's the point of having it?
Very true. All right, best dessert in town.
Oh gosh, I don't know. Anything with ice cream. Yeah, anything with ice cream is a winner. I'm trying to think. Wait, no, that place is closed. I don't know. Just ice cream, really. I'm not that picky.
So you just went to Dreamette recently, right? Did you
Dreamette was really good. They had a Cinnamon Toast Crunch shake that was phenomenal. Mini Bar Donuts, that's another place that's really, really good, because you can get a bunch of different donuts and a bunch
Some
of different flavors.
Some consider donuts breakfast, other people dessert.
Oh, no, yeah. It's definitely, you can eat that any time of the day. But yeah, I would say Mini Bar Donuts is probably the best dessert, just because of the variety that you can get, and you don't have to get one huge donut. You can get a bunch of different flavors, and you know, it's equals like one donut.
Are you someone who has ice cream in the freezer at all times?
No, because I'll eat it. I'll eat it until it's gone, because in my mindset that the quicker I eat it, the faster it gets out of the fridge and the faster I get healthy. So if I have it in the freezer, then that's just, I'm going to finish it in a day, just because I think I have that thought process. But they're starting to come out with more better, healthier alternatives for ice cream. Halo Top comes to mind. I think it has a lot less sugar and more protein in it, so you don't feel as guilty about eating
it yet.
It's good. It's really good. There's another one, too, that is along those same lines, you know, health-wise, and they taste surprisingly good.
Tyler, where's the best place in town for dessert?
Oh, I'm so simple. I'll just go to, like, Sweet Frog or something and get some ice cream, which brings me to this thought I was just thinking about. You know, on Uber Eats, they can actually deliver ice cream.
Oh, hell.
Why would you do that? There's zero chance it'll stay.
Are they delivering, like, a cone? Or
No. Like, you'd go to, like, the machine, get frozen yogurt and, like, toppings on top.
Okay.
But there's zero chance it would make it to a delivery.
Yeah, that's
very strange.
Unless they have a special cooler.
I did see recently that some Uber drivers were caught eating the people's food that they were supposed to be delivering.
We've asked Big Country about that, because he's taken food through Uber Eats to people, and he said the bag is completely sealed, so that way you can't eat it. But I guess those people decided to reseal it after. We went to Biscotti's last night for my ladies' night dinner, and Biscotti's in Avondale has some of the best dessert. Right when you walk in, I mean, they tempt you immediately, because they've got their huge case. It's basically the length of the bar, and they've got everything you could possibly imagine in there. And then when you ask for the slice, it comes like the size of my hand, like standing. I mean, so it's like a good like 7 inches worth of dessert, because it's 3 and 4 layers on every single thing that you get. So my one girlfriend is obsessed with dessert, so she ordered like 5 different ones. And now, granted, she shared them, but still, we all got to kind of taste different ones. And I'm not the biggest dessert fan. I'm always going to be more of like the savory. Give me like the extra helping of mashed potatoes versus the dessert. But I will say, if you left room for dessert, oh my gosh, you've got to try Biscotti's. It's the sister restaurant of BB's in San Marco, and they too have fantastic desserts. But I mean, if you love like the chocolate mousse or the Oreo pie or the cheesecake, you know, topped with mango mousse, I mean, we're talking about extravagant and amazing desserts.
I think it's Flying Iguana that has the little like the chocolate cup, like the dipping sauce for the churros. That is phenomenal. Churros are highly underrated. And then there was a place that used to have like fried bananas, and they would serve them with that, with a little sauce, a little chocolate sauce bowl too. We actually broadcast there a couple times, but yeah, they're closed, so I probably won't mention them. Mention that name.
And then for me, any place I can get key lime pie, especially if it's fresh.
That's, key lime pie is very underrated.
Like, I think North Beach always has fresh key lime pie. But because I've made in the Keys before, I've made key lime pie, and you know when you've had fresh key lime pie, it's so good. By the way, right now the Cavaliers are up 19-13 on the Celtics, about 5 minutes to go in the first quarter. Certainly, as you already know, the Celtics lead the series 1-0. All right, Blythe, next week we're going to talk a little personality tests. Now that Donna will be back in the fold, we'll make her take the personality test. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Did you think, a little preview, did you think yours was on point?
Mine was 100% on point.
Yes, that's what I was hoping. Yes.
There's 16 different...
It's called 16 personalities. Yeah, 16, so if you guys want to join in, go take your personality quiz, and we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, absolutely. You can tweet out the link. They can take it, and certainly they can weigh in on whether or not they thought theirs matched.
Mine was spot on.
We'll make Tyler take it as well. Thanks to Tyler for producing the show tonight. Stay tuned for Hacker After Dark with Andrew Gibson. They'll keep you posted on this Cavs-Celtics game. For Blythe Brumleave and Lauren Brooks and the absent Donna Murphy, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday night.